Welcome back to the Renaissance, Ray, episode 112, recorded on the 8th of January 2021, our first podcast, apart from the bullshit filter we did last week, 2021. And America just had like the worst coup ever yesterday.
It's kind of a negative view. I, if you think about it, we've had our own renaissance, if you will, of violence and revolution or coup or whatever. So fuck me, what's going to happen next?
How long have I been predicting that would happen?
No, you're not wrong. You know, but what gets
How many years have I been predicting
at
that?
At least since I've known you, but probably before that. But here's the thing: you and I are not experts. I'm not an expert in anything. I think my wife will attest to that. But even I knew there was going to be trouble yesterday. How come the National Guard weren't already called out? Part of the answer is Trump didn't call them out. Eventually, Pence had to after all the shit had happened. But anyway, we're not here to talk about that. But the point is, come on, they had to know something was going to happen.
Crazy times.
Yes.
In the not so United States of America.
Next podcast.
Let's get back to Leonardo.
Yes.
In addition to working with his old master, Verrocchio, on paintings in the 1470s, he also produced at least four paintings, mostly on his own, that we're aware of and that have survived.
Right.
And one of those, The Annunciation, sucks so much, it's been debated for centuries whether or not it's really a Da Vinci or not.
I got to ask, it truly sucks on its own merits, or it sucks vis-a-vis how could this possibly be one of Leonardo's works?
Well, bit of both.
Okay.
Bit of both, I think. All right. Look, listen, don't get me wrong. If I painted this, you'd never hear the fucking end of it. You know?
Yeah,
if I could paint one square inch of this, I would never stop talking about what a fucking legend I was.
Right.
But
I concur.
And to the untrained eye, when I first look at this, and I've seen this painting a million times.
Right.
In real life, you know, I think we saw it when we were at the Uffizi in Florence a few years back. It's impressive, but it also there's something kind of not right about it.
Well,
and we'll walk through what those things are. So if you're playing along at home,
and you should be,
get up a picture of The Annunciation by Leonardo da Vinci, and let's play along. We'll walk you through it as we do when we pull out paintings. Certainly not good enough for Leonardo, but here's the thing. He painted this at some point in his early 20s.
Right.
And, you know, I love the fact that he wasn't perfect.
Yes.
You know, that genius.
Makes me feel better.
As he, like, you know, even Da Vinci.
Had to start somewhere. Right. Right. He had to fuck up. Yeah. Gotcha.
Yeah. Like, I love stories of geniuses that make mistakes. The famous favorite one I often talk about is when Albert Einstein in 1904, 1905, whatever it was, when he came up with his special theory of relativity, the maths, as he was finalizing the maths for it, it indicated that the universe was expanding. And he said to himself, well, that's not right. I mean, everyone knows that the universe is static.
Yeah.
So he fudged it. He put in a thing called the universal constant.
Right.
He just fudged the math.
He tweaked it.
He tweaked it. He was like, well, obviously
let
that's...
Let me just move this over here and voila.
And then a few years later, I think telescopes were produced. I think Hubble looked through a telescope and he went, look at that. The universe is expanding. And Einstein pulled out his his thumb and just sort of rubbed out the universal constant.
Let me reverse my reversal. Yeah,
no one saw that.
I was waiting for y'all to catch up to me. Yeah, let me just get rid of that there. Yeah.
Yeah. Good thing I didn't win a Nobel Prize for that.
True. And what did we learn from this? Always do your equations in pencil, so you can change it as you need to. Yes.
and your paintings of the Annunciation. The Annunciation, of course, for those of you who, you know, are sort of out of touch with your Christian mythology, is the moment when the angel Gabriel told Mary that Yahweh, the God of the Jews, had stuck his magic penis in her virginal vagina and knocked her up.
Mm.
Now,
yes.
Ever wondered why Yahweh didn't come and tell her himself, Ray?
God, there's got to be something for this. She would see how unattractive he is, and he wouldn't get a second chance. No, I don't know. He's a big picture guy. Look, I'll be there for the penis thing, but the actual messages, I'll send someone else. But what you forgot to mention is that Gabriel has landed, not unlike the way Iron Man lands when he comes flying in. That's pretty badass. I think that's where Iron Man got it from. I enjoyed that very much.
Do you think he just came down vertically?
Boom! That's right. He's already on one knee. He's like, yeah, boom. Yeah, bad. No, boom. But what's your theory? Sorry.
Well, I just think it's kind of a dick move to send one of your boys to tell some virgin that you knocked her up while she slept.
Yeah.
According to this painting by Da Vinci, he didn't even come with the bouquet of flowers. He's got one, like, white lily.
Yeah.
That's it. I mean, I think at least a dozen roses if you knocked up a virgin while she slept.
I took your virginity. You were asleep. There certainly was no foreplay. I know women are big into that, so I've been told. And all you get is one crappy flower. I'm sorry. It's not good enough.
Yeah, I think that's a pretty dick move on behalf of Yahweh. If you're going to knock a chick up. I mean, right. Even...
Flowers before, not after.
who was Stalin's chief of police?
Oh, Beria.
Beria. Yeah. Even Beria raped women.
Flower man. Yeah.
He had his bodyguards give them some flowers as they were leaving.
Right.
Like, I mean, Yahweh isn't even as thoughtful as Beria,
wow.
Stalin's rapist
security
chief.
I think that's all we need to know.
I mean,
yeah. Beria did it better. Than Yahweh is all I'm saying. There's
Beria
a coffee mug.
Did it better. That's a coffee mug. Let's talk about the Archangel Gabriel for a second. Quite a bit of a story. The Archangel Gabriel in the Hebrew Bible, aka the Old Testament, to you Christians out there, he appears to the prophet Daniel to explain his visions. He also appears in the Book of Enoch.
Right.
And other ancient Jewish writings. He is described alongside the Archangel Michael as the guardian angel of Israel.
Wow, busy.
Defending its people against the angels of other nations. So,
What's our angel?
Other nations have guardian angels as well.
Wow.
You got to wonder, like, if Yahweh is the only God and Yahweh favors Israel, why do the other nations have angels, you know, defending them against Israel? Why would he let that happen? Why did he allow that to happen?
Exactly. God is mysterious.
An archangel, by the way, is an angel of high rank.
Sure.
They appear in religions outside of Judaism, but the English word archangel is derived from the Greek for chief angel or angel of origin.
Ooh.
Appears only twice in the New Testament. First Thessalonians, with the voice of the archangel and with the
How's
trumpet call of God.
Right.
And then in relation to the Archangel Michael in Jude 9. So there you go.
Are we arch podcasters?
Arch.
In the Greek sense.
I think is how it's pronounced.
Anyway.
Yeah.
Okay.
Arch podcasters. Yeah, I think so. And we're defending podcasting against, you know, quality. And highbrowness.
Oh, do we ever? Do we ever? Oh, anyway, good one. Yeah.
Anyway, so this is Gabriel comes down in the painting. Yeah, to tell her. She doesn't look impressed, I think.
No.
She's giving him a look like, Yeah. Oh, okay. So, you know, I woke up feeling a little bit sore. I wondered what was going on there.
Leakage.
There was a bit of blood.
Right. I've been shot.
Thanks.
Well, here's my thing. Her face is neutral, but her left hand is up like... So she's kind of all over the place, which is why God didn't come back the second time, because she's a lot to deal with. I don't know, but I'm getting mixed messages from her. What do you take from her countenance and body posture?
That left palm that she has facing him is obviously another Iron Man thing.
Oh, that's right.
She's trying to shoot plasma blasts.
She got plasma blasted. Hands. Boom! Yeah. Sorry.
Let's talk about the painting. Now, despite the debate, I just want to point out there is evidence that Leonardo was the primary artist, if not the only one. There's a surviving study of the angel's arm in one of his notebooks. The painting shows evidence of his trademark style of dabbing the oil paint with his hands and fingers. He liked to get up in there.
Fingering
with
by
the
Leo.
Hands and the fingers.
Right.
Yeah. He liked to just, you know, he was a finger painter, basically.
Are we sure
Leonardo
it's his finger?
Leonardo da Vinci was...
Sorry. Too much. Too soon?
We'll get to that in the next episode. Leonardo's obsession with penises.
Right. Anyway.
Yeah, no, it's got fingerprints, unless his dick had fingerprints on it. Maybe his dick had prints. I don't know.
Hey.
Maybe he was a genius. Who knows? Right. He could have had fingerprints on his dicks.
Exactly.
On his dick. I don't know.
So there's telltale
there
marks. Yeah,
if you get up really close to the painting, you can see finger smudges on Mary's right hand and on the leaves of the base of the lectern that she's got her book on. The faces are also very Leonardo-y. If you look at the faces, there's this weird thing, and it's not just in Leonardo's paintings. You see this a lot in paintings from the era, but they don't have any eyebrows. They've plucked their eyebrows.
Yeah,
they've plucked their eyelashes. They're almost hairless, these people, on their faces.
Right. Not quite human or something. I don't know.
Well, I think it was a trend in Europe at the time.
We should bring it back.
Where you just got rid of all of the hair on your face. David Bowie did for a while there, like Man Who Fell to Earth.
Right.
He shaved his eyebrows off.
Oh, yeah.
Leonardo, people don't tend to know this, but Leonardo liked his models to be completely hairless except for the pubes. In fact, he would pluck all of their hair himself with tweezers and then stick it in the pubic area. He loved a lot of hair on the pubes.
Dedication.
He was like, listen, hair,
hair was meant to be in one place.
He liked big bush.
Right.
Big bush, didn't want
like
it anywhere
big
else.
Big bush and I cannot lie. Sorry.
Now, if you look at the painting closely, you can see some of the problems that it has. The garden wall. Let's look at this garden wall. Now, for a start, the perspective on it is kind of wonky.
Right.
It's further away from us than, let's say, the tabletop of her lectern, or the thing that the lectern is sitting on, the base of the lectern.
Right.
So in theory, because it's further away, it should have less depth, unless it's like really, really long, but it doesn't seem to be. And yet it has about the same depth. So the perspective is
a little off
not
there.
Right.
Yeah.
Also, if you look behind her left, her right arm, sorry, the one that's sticking out, holding the book open.
Mm-hmm.
Look at where the top of the wall goes. It's sort of, okay, it looks three-dimensional, And then all of a sudden, it gets to where the wall joins, and it seems to, it's a bit like an Escher painting. It just sort of merges in with the wall somehow.
Yeah.
See, like it's supposed to be in front of the wall, I think. But it just kind of doesn't look right when it comes across her arm there. It just sort of looks weird.
Yeah. My thing was, And I know you're about to point this out, but I didn't realize it at first. Is like with the way, you know, because we know that Leonardo loves his drapes, his drapery, the way he can do exquisite things with those. But the way the armchair is to her left, and her drape also goes over that. It literally looks like she has three knees. She's well on her way to becoming an octopus, and you actually have to stare for a couple of seconds to realize, okay, those two are her legs. This is the armchair. I mean, you shouldn't have to work that hard at the painting, and it throws the viewer off a little bit. So I don't know if that was something that he did on purpose or just kind of miscalculated, but it is very off-putting because it throws her entire lower half of her body off, and it doesn't make very much sense at first glance.
Yeah. The other thing with the wall is it kind of, you know, there's this direct line between the angel's hand. He's holding up two fingers. He's right. Going, well, he did it to you twice. He did it front and back. Just wanted to explain that.
Business in the front, party in the back. That's God saying.
Yeah, yeah. He tried it in the back first because right. He honestly didn't want to knock you up. No, but it was so much fun. He went ass to pussy. And you're lucky he didn't go ass to mouth, quite frankly.
Because he does this would be a whole different story right now. Or it wouldn't
don't get
be
me story. Wrong. He can still impregnate you if he comes in your mouth. I mean, he's young
because he's magic. Yeah, magic.
Yeah,
semen.
It's magic. It's magic semen. Right. I mean, it can.
can
but
go
if you
down.
Look at right, if you look at where there's supposed to be this line goes between the angel's fingers and her hand, but it's sort of all broken up by where the wall just sort of shouldn't be there. The wall right. serves no purpose enough. Apart from just confusing things, really. Also, if you notice, the angel's wings have a weird brown bit jutting out from the back of them. Apparently, somebody extended the wings at some stage. Leonardo's wings are short and stubby.
Oh,
stubby little wings.
Someone said, "Oh,
malformed
let me fix
wings.
This for you."
Yeah, somebody at some point went, oh, fucking Leonardo.
He didn't even
wings.
Finish.
He didn't really.
Doesn't he know
he never
what
even obviously seen a wing in his life.
Or an angel.
And somebody's touched it up.
Here, I'll show you. Yeah.
I think it was that woman that did the Jesus face on the wall of the church in Spain a few years back.
Good point.
I think she must have been around in the late 1400s. She was like, this is no good.
Let me fix
I haven't
to
fix
you.
Leonardo's
You're
wings.
You're welcome. Yeah.
Maybe she was just in the Uffizi at one stage, whipped out a paintbrush. She was just going around fixing everything.
Scusi,
like my grandmother crossing out
I
swear
need a
words
brush
and books with.
And some brown paint. Please, thank you. They're like, man, you got to go. You got to go. No, yeah. I'll fix this. Anyway, yeah, so that's.
Yeah.
It's, again, it throws everything off. Yeah.
There's a sort of, I don't know, like a cloth wrapped around Mary's waist, a gold robe, and it goes over her arm. You look at the way the fabric is folded on her waist. It's very, very stiff.
Yes.
It looks like somebody's put way too much starch in it or cement and just sort of propped it up there.
Right.
It looks kind of, I mean, look, it's masterfully done with the light and the shading and all of that kind of stuff, but it just looks kind of very stiff and weird and unrealistic. Also, I read that if you look at her right arm, it appears to be twisted at a weird angle and too long.
Yes.
However, this may be evidence of something called
anamorphosis. I just said it that way because it's fun.
Good work.
Yeah. And you have to say it like Harry Potter. And the mephosis, like you're casting a spell. I could be wrong.
Yeah. Apparently, there I found it. Yeah.
There it is.
This is a trick. We've talked about this before in different paintings. A trick of making a painting look right when viewed from a particular angle or height.
Right.
But it looks weird when you view it directly as you would when it's on the wall of a museum or it's in a book or on a monitor. But if we recall that this was a painting that was probably put in a church up high, so you would walk in from the right and you would see it at an angle up high, then apparently that resolves a lot of the issues with her arm. And it may even resolve the issues with the top of the wall too. Leonardo's expecting you to see it from a different angle from the one that we're looking at it.
Right.
today.
But let's give him credit. One, we've already established, I think quite firmly, that we could not paint anywhere near this. And now you're telling me this guy is able to put something down on paper in such a way, because literally it's brush strokes and it's the fingering, but it's literally him painting something that looks better or more accurate from a certain point of view. I mean, that's just freaking clever. I don't know if that was a Renaissance thing or if people were doing it back in ancient Rome. I really don't know. But I mean, that is just mastery of this skill taken to a whole new level. At least that's how I see it. To be able to paint something so it works better from a certain point of view.
But to be fair, scholars have long said that this isn't good enough to be a Leonardo too. So it's not just us that thinks it looks weird.
Right.
Some of the other problems they point out is if you look at the shrubbery in the background,
right?
It's just—I mean, they're kind of just dashed out. Not a lot of attention paid to them.
Yeah, they phoned it in. Yeah.
There are three cypress trees. The one that is furthest away from us should be smaller,
right,
according to the rules of perspective. But they're all the same height, so that doesn't work. I tell you what, I do like though. If you zoom in on that background, the little city.
Right.
The towers and the city and the port and the ships and the lighthouse and everything that's going on down there.
That's incredible.
Really, really like that. A lot of nice detail. He's got the typical, like, alien landscape.
Right.
Craggy mountains in the background there.
Yeah.
Yeah, Mars or, I don't know, something from Game of Thrones. Nice sort of fantasy landscape. I don't think there's anything in Italy that looks like that. Just barren, craggy rocks.
Yeah,
bathed in sunlight. Apparently, Mary is living in quite an upmarket villa.
Yeah,
she obviously had a lot of money.
Did she? I thought had to stay in a manger.
Yes. Okay. That was until word got out that you could go and bang her while she slept.
Oh.
And she wouldn't, she's just completely stoic about it, judging from this painting.
How would you like to stay at my piazza and get a good night's rest? Leave the door unlocked.
People paid good money for that. Like the whole, raping a sleeping woman fantasy. Very, very big in
role playing. I think
ancient
we need to
Jerusalem.
Make that clear. Role playing. I'm uncomfortable.
She knew what was going on.
Oh, yeah, and she would pretend to be...
She didn't know exactly when you would come in.
But that's part of the fun.
She would literally be asleep.
No pun intended.
That's part of the fun, yeah.
Oh, you're waking
She knew
me up.
At some time
right.
between Monday and Saturday,
before
you had paid good money to
right.
break into her house and rape her. She didn't exactly know when that would be.
I think
so,
I could get into that. Sorry.
Yeah.
Too soon.
You had to
too
tiptoe
much.
In.
Oh, yeah.
She also slept. She slept with a dagger under a pillow. She reserved the right to stab you if she woke up. So you had to sneak in there, because that was the fun for her, is not knowing if she'd been raped or not. She had to sneak in there.
Right.
Put some chloroform over her mouth and nose before she woke up.
Right.
Now
I got to go buy chloroform.
Deal.
Where do I get that from? Anyway.
Leonardo. Anyway. He had a side business. He's a chemist.
I mix paints, I make chloroform before you. Hey, it's okay.
What else about this painting?
I don't know.
Yeah, look, the whole weird expression on her face, I mean, very, very sort of early Renaissance, Botticelli-esque. Is she expressing any emotion there whatsoever? It's like maybe mild bemusement. She's like, really? Right,
okay.
Huh?
Mm. I'm going to be the mother. I'll see you later. Now, you do have to admit that obviously the light is coming from the left-hand side, and that is well done, where it hits the angel on the back and it hits Mary in the front, and the parts where the light is not direct has got his tinting and his shadowing that we've already talked about in other paintings, so that he's done very well. But again, there's enough off of it to know that this guy, even though he's clever and he's got some really good techniques and he's open to other ones, he's still learning the trade, he's still learning his craft, and he's still learning what kind of painter he is. So there certainly could be improvements in this. But again, it is an incredible, it's what he's done on this canvas.
Again, in his early 20s, I mean, this is possibly painted, it's usually dated late 1470s. He was born in 52, so he's 25, 26 when he starts this work.
Still pretty amazing.
Incredibly impressive. When you're talking about the shadows, apparently one of the things that innovative about this is his shadows are all different colours.
Oh.
Because he studied shadows. He would do more, a lot more study of optics later, but he'd studied shadows enough at this stage to know that the colour of the shadow is different depending on how much light it's getting from other sources, the color of the background that it's on, what it's reflecting.
Right.
If you look at the shadow that's on the ground in front of the angel, it's almost black and you can barely see any leaves or grass or flowers where that shadow is. If you look at the shadow on the wall behind Mary, it's very faint and there's some coloration there. The shadow in the what looks like to be the bedroom, the boudoir behind her there.
The rape room.
Different colours themselves.
Right. The rape room. Sorry. I mean, the room that shan't be named. I don't know. But if I could just say real quick, so you were talking about the shadowing, the tinting, and I think if people are listening to that now, they're like, well, duh, if I'm getting direct sunlight versus sunlight that's bouncing off the wall, obviously the color of the wall or whatever it's bouncing off of will kind of affect that as well. We can sit here and say, duh, but this guy is figuring it out. This guy is incorporating it into his paintings, and he's using it to bring so much more detail and realism to it. So again, that's why he's Leonardo and we are not.
Yet.
Yet. Give us time. Give us time.
What else have I got here? Yeah, her pose doesn't seem natural either. I was talking about her face. Her pose doesn't seem natural. It's sort of like for Leonardo, who really cared about realistic portrayals of nature and of people, and in his notebooks, there's millions of studies of the way the body twists and turns and moves. This is very sort of weird. It nothing looks right about the way that she's sitting, her posture, the way she's holding her arms, the halo. I wanted to point out halos fascinate me in Renaissance art. Her halo, like we've seen gold plates before, we've seen stripy lines. Hers seems to have delicate flames coming out of it. It's a circle with delicate gold spindly flames. The angel's halo doesn't have a rim around it.
Sticks.
It just has, gold sticks coming out of his head. So they have two different styles of halo. Hers is, I don't know, a little bit fancier than the Archangel
it
Gabriel.
It better fucking be. I mean, I'm just saying.
Well, I don't know, man. The Archangel Gabriel is an archangel. He's been around for a long time. Maybe he's got an old, outdated model. He needs an upgrade. I don't know.
Okay, rule number one. Mother of God trumps everybody. So I'm sorry, but you're wrong here. So yeah, he can get a better halo if he wants. But no, even though she really didn't do much except for lie on her back and not wake up, she gets the better halo. Case closed.
Maybe Yahweh left her that halo as a thank you gift after he raped her. She just woke up and she found it lying on the bed, on a pillow next to her. She's like, I wonder what this is.
Right.
What's going on here? Have a look at the pages of the book that she's reading. Okay. What do you notice about the pages of the book?
It's not that they're different colors. It's the way the light is hitting it.
If you look at the ones that are that are up in the air, they're transparent. You can see the wall through the pages of the book.
That's not right. I don't think you're supposed to be able to do that. Is that because of the type of paint that he used, that after it ages for a while, it gets transparent, like the dog and that other, the puppy? Remember we talked about that, where the dog was basically a ghost dog? It was transparent. Do you remember that?
I have no idea.
You don't
idea
remember? No, we were talking about talking based about. On oil versus the egg yolk. His paintings, some of his paintings would become transparent over time. And if you go back and look at the one where the little puppy is on the ground, not only are the curls of the hair immaculate, but you can see through the dog because he painted it on. So I wonder if that has anything to do with it, but I don't know.
Maybe. Yeah, maybe some of the paint's worn off. Her fingers. I don't know. That looks pretty. Looks pretty deliberate to me. I think they're like she's got special plastic pages. I think Leonardo invented plastic here. He said, "Well, maybe one day, we'll invent a transparent material that you can." I mean, it's going to be like a bad idea for a book, right? You'd be able to see all the pages
for
underneath
other
your
things.
Pages.
Oh, it's going to be a
don't
game
think
changer.
He really thought it through. Right.
Well, he does
very well.
He has a good time. He advances and he moves on to the next thing. But you're right, it does
bleed
into the wall.
Someone else's problem to figure out. How I'm a big picture guy, he said.
Yeah.
Look, there are engineers out there that, look, I'm an engineer too, but there will be engineers in the future whose job it will be to figure this shit out. I'm inventing shit for future generations to work out the mechanics of it. Don't bog me down.
Fucking me with details.
Big picture guy.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Send it to the R&D team. Busy.
I'm a Renaissance man, motherfuckers. Like, don't bog me down in details. That's what I hire other people for. Like Henry Ford. I don't need to know all the answers.
That's
like,
why you're here.
People.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
If you look at the angel's right arm that he's holding up the two fingers, saying, yep, arse and vagina,
Sorry.
Notice there's a ribbon tied around his arm that is sort of fluttering backwards. Which is apparently suggesting that he's just landed, like the wind from the landing.
I just Iron Man'd
it. Blowing it back.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So, look, I didn't know until this point that angels were susceptible to the laws of physics, but it's the laws of physics.
Now you know.
That are blowing his angel ribbon back. So apparently that's another great breakthrough of Leonardo's. He worked out through close observation how physics apply to magical clothing that mythical creatures wear.
Right. So I have a science question. If I'm an angel and I've been accused and I'm flying through the air coming down from heaven or whatever, I know my hair is going to stay perfect because God damn it, I'm an angel. Mm. I get that. But if I tie a ribbon.
It's just lots of hairspray in the hair is what it is.
Right. Okay.
They had a whole cloud in heaven devoted to.
A beauty petition cloud.
Beauty salon.
Right, there we go.
Before you came down, you got
to
look your best.
I'm going to heaven.
Could
I get the works, please?
She's been raped by God. Yeah, yeah. God sending me on an appointment. Yahweh's sending me on an appointment. Simon.
He raped another one.
The hair's got to be perfect.
Right. Okay, but my point is, so he goes to the beautician. The hair, perfect. But the ribbon should still flutter because it's not technically a part of the angel. It's just a cloth. So I don't think it's breaking too many rules if the cloth flutters. I think we can let that go. But that's just me. I don't want to.
So angels just wear normal clothes.
Right.
They don't have any special clothes. It's just normal clothes.
Okay.
That's what you're saying.
Yeah. I mean, they also have a tailor.
Okay.
The different cloud, one cloud over from the beauty salon is a tailor cloud, and they can set you up, I think.
Right.
Yeah. Then there's the grooming of the wings, but we don't have to go into that.
Well, yeah. I mean, the short wings bug me.
Yes.
Because they obviously
won't work.
Aren't going to be able to carry. Yeah. They're not going to be able to create enough lift.
Thank you.
For someone of this sort of mass.
Girth. Yes.
To fly.
Mass. Yeah,
but I assume that's because they're magical wings.
Yeah, they don't even have to move.
Physics.
It's like Santa Claus's reindeer.
Yeah,
you just go up.
Yes. Yeah, they just go up. They just. Anyway, trying to unpick this, it's tricky. There's also a cypress tree in the background.
Right.
If you look at just where the angel's fingers are, there seems to be a cypress tree growing out of his fingers.
Sure.
Some sort of a tree, but it's got a very spindly trunk and then a massive body of leaves.
Bush.
On top of it. There's two of them actually there. Two massive bush. Cape bush. A huge cape bush up there. That doesn't seem right.
Yeah.
I don't think a trunk that skinny and spindly
is going to have
would be able to hold
yeah.
that much foliage or foliage. Foliage. Axel foliage.
So for someone who is a nature lover and a nature observer and the first Bob Ross, you think he would have made the wood part of the tree relative to the bush part of the tree or the other way around? But no, it's like big bush, skinny legs. It's a little off.
Big bush, skinny legs.
I'm just going with what I see here.
So that's this painting. Like early on, and maybe some scholars seem to think Leonardo may have done bits of it, and other artists may have done bits of it. But I think that's just an apologetics position to say, "Oh, Leonardo couldn't have painted this. It's got too many mistakes in it." But there you have it. Yeah. Now, getting back to the shadows, I got a quote from him. He said at some point in one of his notebooks, "Shadows will vary." So he's starting to pay a lot of attention, but I think we can tell from this that, look, he's going to do a lot more work on perspective and optics in the coming years. He's very young.
Yes.
It's incredible, but it's not quite a masterpiece.
Right. But having said that, I could paint for the rest of my life and not be able to do this. So like you said, he's in his 20s. This kid's going places. Yeah. So.
Now, yeah. James Caffin could knock this out in an afternoon.
Oh, good for him.
So, you know, people can do this, just not us.
We like to make that clear. Yeah.
By the way, I've invited James to come on the show and talk to us about how to paint like a Renaissance master.
Is his Australian accent any more pleasing?
Okay. He's very, very... very demure and softly spoken, okay. James,
all right.
For somebody who's a tattoo artist.
Yeah.
Okay. Very, very quiet, shy, softly spoken guy.
Like a Leonardo brushstroke. Gotcha.
Yeah. You'd love James.
Cool.
He's
looking forward to it.
He's a nice Aussie as opposed to me.
So there are some. Anyway.
Yeah, we've killed most of them. We got rid of them. But yeah, he survived because he's a good tattooist. So, you know, we keep him around.
Cool.
All right. Well, let's move on to some other early Leonardo paintings. The Madonnas. He did some Madonnas.
Yeah. I think we were saying on a previous episode that Verrocchio, his workshop, look, we're not worried about making the next great masterpiece. This is a shop that's supposed to bring in money because each month I got bills, I got to take care of all of my people. So this is a workshop, just like you would think it would be. And so we have to produce stuff that's going to sell, that's going to fly off the shelf. And I think we might have said this last time, but one of those things are the Madonnas, the little small devotional paintings or sculptures of the Madonna and baby Jesus. People love that. They want to put it in their house. If we do a couple of those, we'll change it up a little bit here and there, but those will sell. That'll keep the money coming in. And let's face it, these are Florentines. I mean, these are capitalists and they want to do whatever they can to bring in the bucks.
Yeah. Yeah, artists, as we've said before, these were like commercial studios. Mm-hmm. They were producing stuff on commission.
Yeah.
And Madonnas were very popular at the time in Florence, particularly in Florence. Catholics love their Madonnas. Madonna, right. By the way, do you know what Madonna means?
Oh, mad old nah. No, I don't know. Tell me.
Weren't you a Catholic briefly?
I was. How about this? How about we show Leonardo, if we could go back in time, we show him a current picture of our Madonna. I wonder what he would think. Mm. He'd be like, well, why the eye patch?
She looks weird.
Yeah.
And she
needs to stop.
She's had bad work, really bad work done. Yeah.
She just needs to stop. There comes a point when your best friend needs to turn to you and go, look, Madonna, you need to stop.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Stop. Just stop.
Stop. Yeah. Take a look and listen. Yeah. Anyway.
No, but we show him a picture of Madonna when she was, I don't know, 25.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. He'll be like, oh, yeah. I like to catch her sleeping, if you know what I mean. Anyway.
Is it good enough for God? Is it good enough for Leonardo? This is what I always say. Let's talk about the Madonna of the Carnation first. Oh, by the way, Madonna means my lady, our lady.
That's sweet.
Really, my lady in old Latin. In Italian today, it would be la mia donna, donna lady, la mia mine, la mia donna.
Okay.
Cool. This painting, the Madonna of the Carnation, also known as the Munich Madonna, because that's where it resides today, at the Alte Pinakothek Gallery, one of the oldest galleries in the world, by the way.
Oh, wow.
Built in 1826 by King Ludwig I of Bavaria.
Nice.
Big fan of the Italian Renaissance. Contains a number of really old collections, though, including the Wittelsbach collection, which was begun by Duke Wilhelm IV, 1508 to 1550.
Wow.
Who ordered important contemporary painters to create several history paintings, including the Battle of Alexander at Issus.
Oh, nice.
By Albrecht Altdorfer. Have you ever seen that?
I think we talked about it.
I don't think we did. Well,
that,
no.
That wasn't you.
Look this up.
Let me whip this out. Give it to me again. What's the title?
The Battle of Alexander at Issus. By Albrecht Altdorfer.
Wow. Okay, don't hurt yourself.
People playing along at home, bring this
up. Oh, yeah, yeah, the famous one where, yeah, okay, cool.
It's incredible.
Yes. I could not do this.
On my wall.
I could not do this, yeah.
There's like a million soldiers in this painting.
And they're all trying to kill Alexander. Yeah, sorry.
And behind them is like another alien landscape with like a wormhole or some portal to hell opening up on the right-hand side. It's just stunning, fantastic painting. I love it.
Wow.
Anywho, back to the Carnation Madonna. Painted, they think, around 1478 again, a little bit. He's in his mid-20s, 25, 26. We've got a fat, ugly baby Jesus.
Aww, that wasn't very nice.
On the left, sitting naked on Mary's lap, reaching out for a red carnation, Dianthus carophilus,
sure,
which she is holding. Do you know what the carnation symbolizes, Ray?
You said on a couple episodes something, well, actually it was a while ago, but something about Mary's tears. Or am I getting that? Or is that the origin, supposedly, of the carnation?
Yeah, well, carnations have been around a long time.
Right.
Probably native to the Mediterranean region. They were mentioned by the Greeks over 2,000 years ago.
Wow.
The term dianthus was coined by the Greek botanist Theophrastus, and it comes from the ancient Greek words for divine, dios, and flower, anthos, the divine flower. The
wow.
Greeks called it 2,000 years ago. So, again, like most of the symbolism that we see in these Renaissance paintings attributed to Christian mythology goes way back.
Right.
Ancient Greece. The term carnation is believed to come from the Latin coronae, a wreath, garland, chaplet, or crown, as it was one of the flowers used in Greek and Roman ceremonial crowns.
Cool.
So it could also come from the Latin caro, the genitive carnis, meaning flesh, which refers to the natural color of the flower, sort of a pinky, fleshy color, a pink carnation.
So it's got some
history.
But
legend...
Yeah.
It does. But the Greek legend behind the red carnation is that Diana the goddess...
Sure.
A.K.A. Wonder Woman, was walking around one day, as goddesses do, and came upon a shepherd boy.
Oh, I like where this is going.
Yeah. I should put some music on. She said to him, would you like to tend my bush?
Is that your staff?
And
sorry, go ahead.
Are you just pleased to see me? And for some reason, he turned her down.
Sorry, I didn't mean to yell. Go ahead.
Now, as we all know from Wonder Woman comics and movies, you don't want to piss off Wonder Woman.
No.
She ripped out his eyes, threw them on the ground.
Right? Unnecessary.
Where they sprouted into the dianthus flower.
Happens all the time.
Now, I, for one, would like to see that in the next Wonder Woman movie. I haven't seen Wonder Woman 84.
Yeah, make it his testicles. Eyes are kind of boring. Well, I don't know. One testicle, one ball.
I just want a whole movie where Wonder Woman walks around and rips out people's eyeballs if they look at her the wrong way.
I will pay good money.
They turn her down.
Money.
She goes, hey, I'm Wonder Woman. You want to fuck? And they go, sorry, no, I'm married. She just rips
wrong
their
answer,
eyes
bitch.
Out, throws them on
yeah.
the ground.
Yeah, 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 yeah.
Just a whole movie of that. Just like eyeballs everywhere. Superman comes to try and stop her. She rips out his eyeballs. Batman, she rips off his mask, rips off out his eyeballs.
Right.
She's just ripping out eyeballs everywhere. It's just the whole world's
blind. She needs
blind.
It.
It's just her.
Just give it to her.
Finally.
Someone step
she's
up.
She's just sitting.
Be a hero
she
and give
rips
it to
Lincoln.
Her. Oh, wow.
Rips Lincoln off his monument. And she just sits there.
Jesus.
And there's just a world full of blind people, eyeballs everywhere. People are slipping over everywhere they go on the eyeballs.
Oh,
my God. That's a Wonder Woman movie.
Is it? Okay.
And for people that are about, that are halfway through writing me an email pointing out that Diana the goddess isn't Wonder Woman, she's Princess Diana and she's an Amazon.
Right.
Yeah, yeah, I know.
Yeah, but that's not
shut
fine.
The fuck up.
It's not fine.
That's a, yes.
Did you?
You don't come here for accuracy.
No, no.
You come here for fun.
Right.
At least you should.
Speaking of fun. I think you reacted to that clip I put on Facebook about somehow Hitler and the Nazis end up being kung fu masters in Africa. I still haven't had a chance to check that out yet, but I'm like, what the did I just see? Anyway.
I need to get that movie and watch it. I did go looking for it.
Right?
I couldn't find it anywhere to
okay.
watch it, but I need to watch that film.
Okay.
The Greeks also knew the flower as Yahweh. The flower of Yahweh, their Yahweh,
right.
J-O-V-E Yahweh, not the Jewish Yahweh. No. According to Christian legend, however,
right.
as you indicated before, carnations grew from the Virgin Mary's tears as she watched Jesus carry the cross.
Clearly it's not true.
Of course,
sorry,
she wasn't a virgin anymore at that stage. But
no, she wasn't, sorry.
And they also symbolize blood. So the purpose of it in this painting is
heavy.
Mary,
right,
being a bit dark. She's like you can tell on her face. Just she does have an emotion on her face. Her emotion is like, look, this carnation symbolizes the fact that you're going to be killed when you're a young man. So and I'm going to watch you die.
Yeah.
So enjoy it while it lasts, kiddo, because it's going to be a short ride, not a fun ride, and not a long ride.
And until then, you might want to call up Weight Watchers. That's all I'm saying. This baby has got some mounds of flesh, but I think you said this on Facebook or you said something. I mean, it is so realistic. I feel like I could poke him like the Pillsbury Doughboy. I mean, that is an incredible painting. The body.
Yeah, lots of fat, and some of the books I read said that this is Leonardo playing with light and shadow, chiaroscuro, but instead of using drapery now, he's using folds of flesh to demonstrate his capacity for painting three-dimensional objects and making them look like you could reach out and touch them.
It literally
And it
does.
Is. From that perspective, it's fantastic.
Yeah.
Yes.
That is great. And if you look just behind Mary through the windows, you got the dark walls, the dark inner windows, and then you got the light outside. It's another chiaroscuro. So again, this guy has just got mad skill, and I think he's just kind of showing off in this painting between being able to do that, making it look so realistic. And again, I'm sure you're going to go into the views that we see through the windows, and between that and the baby's body, I mean, just incredible. This is much better than the Annunciation we were just talking about. As far as detail.
Yeah. The landscape, again, typical Leonardo alien landscape.
Yeah.
Blue,
Lord of the Rings.
Craggy mountains, Lord of the Rings. Yeah. No ports or buildings in this one. It's just bare.
It's boring.
Really. Yeah, but I think that there's an element in all of these landscapes of... He's depicting this scene, mother and child, with all of the Christian symbolism at the front. But these backgrounds, I actually think, are they're a little bit scary. That's a scary background.
Yeah,
there's
not
that's
inviting.
A, that's an, not inviting. Yeah. It's oppressive.
Right.
It's threatening. It's harsh. It's cold.
Yes. Fortress of
you know,
Solitude.
It says something about the world that baby Jesus is being born into
right.
here. Like, there's all this, beauty in the painting, in a way, I guess. It's pretty enough. It's not Botticelli, Birth of Venus, beautiful, but it's she's attractive enough. The baby's fat and ugly, but... You know, it's a pudgy little baby. There's a vase with some flowers mm-hmm. and the usual drapery, etc. But outside, you've got this cold, harsh, unforgiving world that looks like it's coming to get you.
Yes.
So I think that's really interesting symbolism to put in these paintings. It's disquieting right. is the word I'm looking for.
Maybe
it's disquieting those backgrounds. They make me go fuck.
Yeah,
right?
I'm not going out there.
I don't want to be there.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah. I'm not going outside. Fuck that shit. I'm going to pretend it's COVID there too. But maybe that dark world is what this baby Jesus is going to change, improve, be the savior of. I don't know. I mean, that's obviously a stretch. That's my imagination. But the contrast between here's a little baby Jesus, savior, Holy Mary, Mother of God, and then this stark reality outside her window. That's a heck of a juxtaposition.
Oh, that's a big word.
Thank you.
Juxtaposition. Wow.
It's at least three syllables. I know, because I can count to 21 when I'm completely naked.
How old? 20 and a half, really. How old do you think this Mary is?
Oh, God, see, she's pretty young. She's I don't know, 16? Something. It's kind of hard to tell with her face because she's looking down.
Yeah, I'd go 18 maybe, but she's young. I think Mary is supposed to be like 12, really,
right.
in the book, so maybe 14, 12, 14. 12 when she's betrothed, 14 when she's married, I think. I think that was the Jewish tradition.
Yeah, look at the details of her hair, the braids in her hair at the top right above her forehead, just again.
Yeah.
And the way, not only the detail of the hair, but the way the light is hitting it, this guy knows what he's doing.
But she doesn't, getting back to her expression.
Yeah. Oh, she's not happy.
There is a hint of some
resignation,
sort of smile,
right.
maybe. I actually, the more I look at it now, I think maybe there's a hint of
on the right-hand
amusement
side of her face.
On her face. Maybe the baby reaching for the carnation. She's like, oh, you're so cute. Look at you.
Right.
You really don't realize what's coming, do you, you dumb fucking little baby?
Stay out of the garden. Right.
But my first impressions when I was looking at it during the week was she didn't look happy. She was like, oh, fuck, I got this fat shit. I have to. It's going to ruin my fucking life now. How am I going to go clubbing when I've got this fat fuck I need to look after?
And looking out the windows, the winter walkers are going to, or whatever those things are called, they're going to be coming for us. I mean, this is
white walkers.
This is just going to be a fucking, why do I live here? What the fuck? What am I supposed to do? And all I guess is flower.
Yeah. Maybe that building she's in is the wall.
The tower, yes.
Maybe, yes. She's in the wall looking out over the white walkers. I also am fascinated by the baby Jesus's peen here. We got the baby pee-pee.
Right.
And I was trying to work out.
Let me zoom in.
Is the holy foreskin still attached?
That's right.
Here?
Oh, I'm about to find out.
Zooming in.
I'm zooming in.
Yeah, I've done that already. Yeah. It's I'm zooming in on baby Jesus's penis. I don't know how old he is here. I don't know how.
Penis.
I think they're like,
right?
They get the bris when they're like 8 days old. So,
well, the baby's sitting
man,
up,
what,
so he should already be past age 8 days.
Right. So the holy foreskin has probably been removed,
right.
And it's in a little special box somewhere to be sold at auction later on.
And she's trying to distract him from the pain with the carnation. Mm. It all makes sense to me now. All right.
Look at the pretty flower. Look at the pretty
Don't think
flower.
Of the pain of the penis. Look at the flower. Mm. Don't look around the flower. Mm. Look at the flower.
Mm. Now, talking about babies, Leonardo studied babies a lot. We'll talk about that a little bit more later on. But he wrote in one of his notebooks, "In little children, all the joints are slender and the portions between them are thick. Mm-hmm. This happens because nothing but the skin covers the joints without any other flesh and has the character of sinew connecting the bones like a ligature. And the fat fleshiness is laid on between one joint and the next."
Wow. Which is why this doesn't look as two-dimensional as the Middle Ages painting, because, again, he's, like, studying bodies, and he's like, this is what a real body looks like. This is what it would do. That's what I'm going to paint.
Yeah. He also painted on the cushion that the baby's sitting on. You can see dangling from it some what look like crystal balls.
Right.
A suggestion is that this may be an indication that the painting was commissioned
right.
by the Medici. The balls, the parlay being there.
Yeah, you got to slide the balls in.
Symbol.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. But as we'll get to shortly, Leonardo loved sliding the balls in.
he knows
let's
what he
move
likes.
On to yeah. the other Madonna that he painted around about the same time. This one is called The Madonna and Child with Flowers. It resides in Russia's Hermitage Museum and is also known as the Benoit Madonna.
Ooh.
Because it disappeared for centuries.
Oh.
It was considered lost. But then in 1909, the famous Russian architect Leon Benoit exhibited the painting in St. Petersburg as being part of his father-in-law's collection that he inherited.
Right.
Leon Benoit built a ton of shit in St. Petersburg, massive, prominent architect of his day. He built the Cathedral of Notre Dame in St. Petersburg, the Mausoleum of the Grand Dukes of Russia, and the Peter and Paul Fortress, the Russian Chapel in Darmstadt,
right.
the Alexander Nevsky Cathedral in Warsaw, among other things. And, by the way, his grandson was the actor Sir Peter Ustinov.
Mm, I know that name.
So one of my favorite actors growing up.
Mm-hmm.
Always, he played Nero in Quo Vadis, 1951.
Gotcha.
Played Hercule Poirot in a number of films. What else was he famous for?
Hmm.
Anyway, lots and lots of movies. He's one of those guys who turned up in everything. And I was like, oh yeah.
Yeah.
There you go. Oh, Peter Ustinov.
Let me ask you something real quick, because I know this is supposed to be, because we're talking about Leonardo, who he's doing something different here. So the Annunciation we just talked about and the two Madonnas, and we're about to go into the second one. A lot of the books kept stressing that, look, this is not just like a photo or whatever. This is him taking his two-dimensional plane, but trying to tell a narrative within it. So it's like he's literally trying to capture a very magical or special, not magical, a very special moment. And I didn't really get that sense in the Annunciation, and I kind of got it in the Madonna that we did just cover. But this one, the Benoit, I mean, Mary is actually smiling here. We'll go into her looks in a moment. Not that I like to judge women on the looks, because that's not who I am. But I see more animation in her face here than I have in the other two paintings so far. Because, again, he is trying to tell a story, a narrative. It's not just a really good photo. It's not really just a good painting. It's supposed to be like, boom, this is what happened at the exact moment that you've heard about in the Bible.
Let me ask you a question. What's the big difference between the Carnation Madonna and the Benoit Madonna?
This one is, let me zoom it in the shape of a cross. There's like two flowers in the shape of a cross. It's kind of put
in
your
face.
The
thing that jumps out at me
the
most is in the Carnation Madonna,
right.
there are no halos.
Oh, let me pull that back up here. Okay, right.
No halos. We're always seeing halos on Madonna and Baby. This one, no halos.
I think it was so focused on the baby's body. But anyway, sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, the penis. Maybe if it was a rule, if you have the penis showing,
you don't
you
need,
can't have a halo.
You don't need it.
Yeah, it's its own halo. Penis needs a halo. Holy foreskin. In the Benoit Madonna, they do have halos, and they're the best halos ever.
Yes.
They're just, they look like they're made out of a thin line of gold.
Right.
And they're just hovering.
Yeah. Translucent, transparent.
Yes, the inside of it is translucent. But I love the fact that there's like the side of the halo that's closest to the viewer is thicker than when it moves away from you.
Right?
Yes. So it looks like a three-dimensional piece or like a three-dimensional gold.
Yes. Like it would be.
Whatever. Yeah. Tiara that's just hovering above their heads. But you know, there's no lines. There's no sun rays. There's no fire.
Yeah.
Coming out of it.
Yeah.
It's the cleanest. This is like the halo that Apple would produce. Johnny Ive, if he had to produce a halo. Or
after Steve Jobs sent it back five times. No, I think you can do better. Oh, fuck. Okay. And finally comes up with this.
It's the Dieter Rams for design freaks out there. Dieter Rams, who designed all of the greatest products from Braun in the 60s and 70s. Who Johnny Ive ripped off for all of the early Apple products.
Oh my God.
This is a Dieter Rams halo. Right. Just stripped down to its bare essentials. What do you need in a halo? Right. Really? What's the purpose of a halo?
Literally, halo. Just the ring around the head. It's there being held up by magic of God. Don't need anything else. Move on.
Yeah. Yeah. Let's just get rid of all the unnecessary elements.
Trappings.
Leonardo stripping it back.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Unplugged. Leonardo unplugged.
Baby is still fat, but not quite as fat. Mary looks substantially younger. Now she's starting to look like a 13-year-old girl.
And I am not turned on. Can I just say, and this is not me judging, because again, I'm not one of those guys, but it's like they went to a trailer park.
Well, you can't afford to be one of those guys, let's be honest.
Hey, my money is just as good. Anyway, they went to the meanest, roughest trailer park they could get, and they get a young girl about 12 who clearly her mother and father are brother and sister, going back several generations. And they put her in a fancy dress, and they throw a baby on her lap. She is holy, but wholly unattractive. That's all I'm saying. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah, like... Like she was happy when she got raped by Yahweh, because she's no first one else would touch her.
Someone besides her dad. Oh. Right, right.
Yeah.
My dad said, I'm the best kisser in the whole family. No, she was quite pleased when God came along.
But the big thing about this, and the thing that makes this painting worth a look if you're playing at home, Madonna and the flowers, or the Benoit Madonna, is the way she's holding a different flower here.
Mm-hmm.
And not a carnation. And the baby is holding it and looking at it, studying it intently. And you can really see that. You can see the baby's eyes.
Yes, it's fixated.
Are focused.
Yes.
Because Leonardo knew that babies' field of vision is very short. They can only see just beyond their noses. Oh. And so the baby is pulling the flower just in front of its nose.
Right.
And it's focusing on it. It's studying it. And that really is very masterful, the way that he's depicted that, I think.
Yes.
Like, you really believe that baby is studying the flower. I mean, I don't know how he managed to pull that off. Did he just get a baby and strap its head in place and put something in front of its nose for a week?
Right.
Probably.
Let's go with that.
Leonardo.
Yeah.
He wasn't beyond that.
Yeah.
But that's really, but yeah, and she does have emotion on her face. So she is ugly. She's butt ugly.
but happy.
She looks happy. For the first time.
Yes.
I'm seeing a Madonna and child painting where she looks happy with the fact that she's got a baby on her lap. She's like, yay, I'm not going to be alone for my whole life.
I got you.
I got someone to play with.
Right.
And we're about this, you know, he's not that much younger than me because I'm a child.
So pretty soon we can play together.
Yeah.
This is uncomfortable.
No landscape. There is it's a dark room again, a lot of chiaroscuro, light and shade. There is it's almost Rembrandt-y how dark it is.
Yeah.
There is a window, but we see nothing through the window.
No
craggy peaks this time. Right. Yeah.
They're on the second story.
In fact, it looks like, well, maybe they are in a tower. Maybe because she's so goddamn ugly. She was locked away in a tower. Exactly. Jesus Christ and his mother. She's so goddamn ugly. Lock her up.
Lock her up. I don't want to see that again. Yeah, my job here is done. I don't want to. Anyway, you're right, though. Yeah. He's focused. Yeah. But, and the other thing I read that the baby and the mom are being hit by the same light. There's no, you know, she's got one shadow or shading. He's got another. They're being hit by the same light. Everything is pretty much dark around them except for the window itself. And so it's the focus is all on them. And that's the way it should be if you're a good Christian.
Now, my one complaint about this on my first impression is that it does it's dark and murky compared to Leonardo's other paintings from around this period. You look at the Madonna with the Carnation. There's lots of brightness in the fabric and lots of sheen and luster coming off of everything. This one, the coloration is very dark and murky and dirty and not vibrant at all. Right. And apparently that's because some cunt painted over it at some point.
Son like of the a wings. Bitch. Right.
Someone went, fucking Leonardo, man. I get tired of
fixing
your
fucking paintings.
It's a tour bride. I come in the morning. I got the hangover.
Give me some black paint.
Somebody just got some brown paint, just painted over the whole thing. That's a much better.
No charge.
So, apparently that's why it's so dark and dingy and dismal, this painting.
Good God.
Is some cunt painted over. What the fuck were they thinking?
Let's get a TARDIS and go beat the shit out of him and break his hands.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Just to wrap up this episode, Leonardo had plenty of babies to model at this stage. In 1475, his father married a third time.
Aww.
And to this wife had two legitimate sons, Antonio, born in 1476, and Giuliano, born in 1479. And Leonardo's notebooks from this period have lots of sketches of babies in various activities, poking at their face and trying to pick up objects like fruit, playing with cats. So he had a lot of babies around to study, which is why his babies are pretty outstanding. But Leonardo apparently didn't like kids, generally speaking. He didn't like two things he really didn't like in life. One was kids.
Right.
One was pussy. let's talk about the kids first. He wrote a letter many years later to one of these stepbrothers when the stepbrother grew up and had a kid of his own. Leonardo wrote him a letter in which he said, "I learn from your letter that you have an heir, an event which I understand has given you great pleasure. To the extent that I had formerly judged you to be endowed with prudence, I am now convinced that I was as far from being a perspicacious observer as you are from being prudent, for you are congratulating yourself on having engendered a vigilant enemy, all of whose energy will be directed toward achieving a freedom he will acquire only on your death."
God damn, he's not wrong. He's not. My girls are already spending my money, so no. Leo pretty much nailed it on the head there.
You have money?
Let's see. I got a dollar here, a quarter there. But the point is, every time I put it down or gum, it disappears. So I know exactly what this guy's going through. They're my sworn enemies.
So he didn't like kids, never had any children of his own, and
smart man.
Had no known relationships with women either. Now, when you go through his notebooks, he draws a lot of genitalia. A lot more than I appreciated.
Right.
Have you ever seen a picture of how he draws a pussy?
No. Please tell me where to go. I mean, did he do a good job? Does he know what he's talking? Does he know what his, is his observational skills?
No.
Okay.
No.
Okay.
No.
All right.
No.
Answer my question.
Let me send you this link.
All right.
For people playing at home, if you want to Google Leonardo da Vinci vulva, you can do that, Ray.
Okay.
Google Leonardo da Vinci vulva. And you'll see the scariest looking pussy you've ever seen in your life. I don't know, what was the monster in Stranger Things?
Hey!
The Demogorgon? Yeah. Demogorgon?
Yeah, I'm not turned on.
Yeah. Leonardo's depiction of a vagina looks like the Demogorgon. Right. It looks like it's going to swallow you up.
It's like
and eat you.
D'Angelo's been in there, just stretched it all out.
Now, if you look down the page,
yeah,
you see like a little flowery thing.
Yeah.
That's actually a butthole. It's an anus in the center.
Okay. Oh.
That he got distracted when he was drawing the butthole and he drew a flower around it. Petals.
Right.
Around the butthole.
Oh, petal ass.
And what looks like a butt plug above it, about to go into it.
Well, clearly.
Now.
Yeah.
Yeah, now, I'm fascinated by this. Number one, like, we tend to think of Leonardo as being this great scientific mind, and he, you know, he cut open corpses and studied human anatomy in great detail. Obviously never seen a pussy in his life when he drew this.
Never met
anyway.
Never met a pussy he liked. I gotcha.
And according to scholars, this drawing is around 1508. Now, he was born in 1452.
So he knows.
So he's in his he's in his mid-50s when he drew that.
Still doesn't know what's going on down there.
Now, maybe women's vaginas have changed a lot in the last 500 years.
Through evolution.
Yeah, maybe he's drawing this immediately post-childbirth.
Right.
And it's just all medical. Stretched and flabby beyond recognition. It's been torn wide open.
Right.
I don't know what's going on here, but...
You said you like someone who wasn't perfect or someone who'd made mistakes or whatever. Well, here's a huge gashing mistake. No pun intended. Clearly he doesn't know what the fuck he's doing.
Now, there's another page. If you go down, are you on the rct.uk page? The Royal Collection Trust? There's another picture from the same notebook where he's got drawings of penises, and he knows what a penis looks like.
Oh, penis master.
No problems with that. Yeah. He also has a naked drawing of a woman showing her internal anatomy, so he knew what that looked like.
Right.
He's got, all of her organs drawn there, reproductive organs. And he's got the human testes and everything drawn very anatomically correct.
Yeah.
So he knew what a dick looked like, but a pussy?
It's not his thing. Yeah.
Not so much. there's no labia minora in the vagina either way.
Those don't exist. It's a myth.
According to this description I've got here in the vagina drawing, the urethral orifice is almost papilliform, as if this individual had given birth multiple times. There may have been some prolapse, a weakness in the musculotendinous floor of the pelvis, which holds the bladder.
Yeah, not hot.
Leonardo was interested in how the six gaps in the skin could open and close, the eyes, nostril, mouth, vulva or penis and anus, and the heart, though it is not in the skin.
Right. Wow.
Hmm.
I mean, yeah.
So
he's an observer.
Anyway. Yeah.
But he has a weakness. He has a flaw.
Well, here's what I wanted to talk about too. I posted this on our Facebook page yesterday. The page of his notebook with the famous drawing of a bicycle that I've seen hundreds of times over the course of my life. It's always cropped. You just see the picture of the bicycle. Did you see the version of it I posted to our Renaissance Facebook page yesterday?
Let me look here. Let me pull it. I did see it.
So if you look at the entire page of the notebook that contains the bicycle, what you will hopefully notice is that down the bottom of it, there are two large penises.
Maybe they're cannon with balls. No,
very
I can't
hastily
back that up.
Drawn.
Yeah, I could draw that.
Chicken legs coming out of the balls and tails on them with like a little butt, a little butt off of it. One of the penises looks like it's about to enter the other one's butthole.
Yes.
And above the head of the one that is about to be entered is the name Sala, who was Leonardo's favorite student at the time. And there's a little graffiti drawing of a head above that as well.
Right.
Now, scholars always say that the bicycle was drawn by Leonardo, but they say that the penises were obviously drawn by one of his assistants.
Right.
Now, A, I have to wonder why. Why do we just assume that it's literally a dick move, two dick move? How do we know that's not Leonardo? He's just sitting there one day and he goes, I'll just draw a couple of dicks. Fantasizing about anally fucking my favorite student, Sayala. Right. Sayala. Maybe because they're so badly drawn, they go, well, that couldn't possibly be Leonardo.
Right.
But who would have the balls? Which one of his assistants would have the balls to draw a couple of dicks in his notebook? Like, is this just a prank when he's not looking one day, like you would do in high school, draw a dick on somebody's page? What was going on?
This has been my experience. If you're fucking me up the ass, I pretty much have carte blanche. I can do whatever I want. So if I am the screw-E and he's the screw-er, I can go in there and put two sets of cock and balls on the page. One, it's a laugh. Two, maybe it's a come on. Three, maybe it's, hey, I'm thinking about you, or you thinking about me, I'll see you later. But the bicycle is detailed and it's solid and it's stern and it's like, that's a Leonardo. You get the two peni and the man on top, and it's like almost stick figure. So I almost wouldn't be surprised if somebody else drew it. But, I mean, we all obviously know how he felt about men. Maybe he was in a lighthearted mood. Either way, it's pretty fucking funny compared to the serious drawing of the bicycle.
And what I love is that you always only see the bicycle. In most Leonardo books.
Yeah, you got to cut that out. Yeah.
You only see the buzz. You never see the dicks.
Good call. Right. Good call.
Now, in his notebooks, he does a lot of drawings of men's buttocks and genitalia, paid a lot of attention to those.
Oh, yeah.
It seems from the evidence, if you add it all up, that Leonardo was either abstinent or gay or closeted gay. Which brings me back to the question I've asked before. What were they putting in the water in Florence? There were lots of gay guys running around. We've talked about how, you know, during the Savonarola episodes, we talked about how, you know, there was a major problem, they thought, the authorities at the time, with gay guys running around. I can't remember what I did quote some numbers in an early episode, but it was 20% of the men in Florence or something were fucking boys. A lot of the great artists that we've talked about, artists, philosophers, writers, thinkers of the Renaissance, were gay or bisexual.
Right. Oh, I was going to say, I got some...
Including, Leonardo da Vinci.
Exactly. At the very least, I mean, he never married. We never hear him talk about women. He obviously doesn't appreciate or know what a vajayjay looks like. So not his cup of tea. There's something going on there, but you're right. You've got the officers of the night who were looking for people. And I think you said this previously, in 1432, an average of 400 men per year were accused of sodomy, and about 60% of them were convicted, which might have been sentenced, exiled, or executed. So it was rampant in Florence. There was, like you say, clearly something in the water, but a lot of them were either artists, or they hung out with the artists, or they had money and they were able to have a good time and not have to worry about going out and working all the time. It was a party city for some of these guys in Florence, having a good time.
Yeah. Maybe you have to be gay to be a great artist. We'll have to ask James Caffin that when he comes on. I mean, I think he is a little bit obsessed with your naked body. Whenever I'm around him, he's always talking about painting naked photos of you on your hands and knees and stuff like that, with apple in your mouth like a pig.
Tell him to schedule me for when COVID's over. I'll be there.
You do it over Zoom. Just pose on Zoom. He can paint it.
Oh, that's not as romantic, but okay. Set that up.
All right. That's all. We'll be back next time.